From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. It's an hour of sounds from radio's golden era, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. We'll open today's program with an episode of Suspense, known as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. This was one of the longest-running radio series during the golden age of radio. The pilot was released in 1940. The series premiered full-time on CBS in 1942 and ran all the way through September of 1962. This broadcast is from the mid-1950s. This is episode 633 in the Suspense series, and it stars Stacey Harris. Mr. Harris was featured frequently on Suspense in the 1950s. Actually, he was featured on many of CBS Radio's programs throughout that decade. This broadcast is from January 17th of 1956. It's called The End of the String. It's a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, and it opens up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you the story of a fantastic theft of a $1 million pearl necklace. We call it The End of the String. So now, starring Stacey Harris, here is tonight's suspense play, The End of the String.
The necklace consisted of 61 perfectly matched pearls. It was insured for $650,000 and was probably worth about $1 million. I got to know about the deal because Sam liked me, I guess, because in Boston, I wasn't competition. Just a nice young fellow who was trying to get ahead in costume jewelry. That's why I happened to be in his private office when the parcel containing the pearls arrived.
I told you, young fella, you were going to see something this morning.
Yeah, that's what you said, Sam.
Yeah, I like you. You call me Sam. Since I've been a big high finance, you know, I got to be Mr. Hyler. You're not impressed. I like that. I should have had a son like you to pass the business.
Go ahead. Pass it anyway. I'm up for adoption.
Hey, smart. Come over here. To the window. You ever see $1 million?
Like in the necklace you told me about? That it, in the package?
Yeah, the same.
How come you have it delivered by mail, Sam? Isn't that risky?
Uh-uh. Sam Hyler's no dope. You get a messenger to carry it from Detroit to Boston, what happens? Somebody gives him a crack in the head. Registered mail, this they don't touch.
Yeah, I'm glad to know about that. I'm just liable to send myself $1 million.
Don't worry. Someday, maybe you will. Hand me the scissors there, will you, on the desk.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, fancy sealing wax, stamp. I'm very impressed.
Sam Hyler, S.H., impresses the customers, and I don't get anybody fooling with the parcel. That's something you got to learn, Mark. In this business, you got to pick and choose your agents, you know, in the other cities. Mine, I know like sons, all bonded.
What was the necklace doing in Detroit?
Customer couldn't make up his mind. So I had my boy there send it back to me.
Hmm.
You see, tomorrow, the next day, the customer will be screaming for it.
I'm better off in costume jewelry. It's too much strain with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Switch on the light, will you?
Okay.
Now, young man, what do you think of this? You are going to see something.
Come on, Sam. Sam! He keeled over. For a minute, I thought he was finished, but he'd only passed out from shock, and I knew why. Inside the box, wrapped in cotton and enclosed in part of a newspaper, were 8 cubes of sugar. $1 million worth of nothing. In half an hour, the office was alive with uniforms. Poor old Sam just sat on the couch, a wet towel on his head, staring over at the box on his desk. I felt really sorry for the old guy. I figured it was about time for me to go, but that's when Sam woke up a bit, and so did a Dartmouth-type cop from headquarters.
Mark, you going?
Well, unless there's something I can do, Sam.
I'll say, before you go...
Yeah?
What did you say your name was, sir?
Hendricks. Mark Hendricks.
Do you know anything about this?
No, not much. I was here when Mr. Heiler opened the box, and that's about it.
Uh-huh. You in this business, too?
Costume jewelry. I have the office downstairs in the front.
Oh. You were in here when the mail came?
No. No, I came up a couple of minutes later.
Didn't see anybody around in the hall?
No, I didn't.
Well, Mr. Heiler, you say that the same postman's been on the route for 5 years?
Every day.
Yeah.
Mark, you go ahead. Thanks to stay.
And I'll look, Sam, if there's anything at all I can do, huh?
Well, maybe you could wait a little. You know.
Sure, Sam, I'll stick around.
How do you feel now, Mr. Heiler?
I'm all right. I'm fine. I wish I was dead.
Okay, I want to get a couple of things straight. You took the mail, miss?
Miss Cummings. Yes, same as usual.
The mailman come into the office? Nobody with him?
That's right.
Nobody else in here?
Only Mr. Heiler. Mr. Hendricks arrived a few minutes later.
You'd already given the package to Mr. Heiler?
Yes.
Okay. I want the name and the address of the sender, and then when the postal inspector gets here, we'll go on from there.
The cop's name was Collie. The postal inspector, Shearer. Between the two of them, they covered everything. I hung around because Sam wanted me there, and though nobody said anything, I had the feeling that until they got through, I was going to be around because they wanted it. About 12 o'clock, the mailman was brought in. He was really shaky. The kind of guy that looks guilty just for living.
I tell you, I don't know. I'm sorry. Listen, nothing like this has ever happened. Mr. Heiler, you tell him.
I told him already.
Mr. Hendricks.
Oh, sure, I'll give you a clean bill.
You see? Well,
look, sir, nobody said you switched packages. All we want to know is where you stopped between the office and here.
I made all my stops.
Okay. We'll start in this building. Did you put the mail bag down anywhere?
No.
How many offices?
Four. No, three. No, four. Five, but next door is empty.
All right, it's four. Where'd you stop first?
Mr. Hendricks. He's in the front.
Yes. Did you put your mail bag down?
Well, maybe just for a minute. We talked about the game last weekend, but nobody was around. Nobody touched the mailbag.
That went on for another half hour. They tried to catch him up on the point of leaving his mailbag unattended, but he swore up and down he hadn't taken his eyes off it. At 3 o'clock, they quit. I went back to my place and caught up on my own mail. A couple of bills, a free dog food coupon. I saw Sam a lot in the next couple of weeks. He took to dropping into the office before going home and taking me out for a drink.
No. You're my guest. I pay for the drinks.
Oh, now, look, Sam, it's embarrassing. You never let me
pick
up a chick.
In the hour of need, you were there. I can trust you. Oh, it is a bad day for me, Mark. I need a friend.
Sure, Sam. I know.
The insurance company called today.
Huh?
Yeah, they're offering a reward. $50,000 for information. I added 10 of my own.
$60,000?
Mm-hmm.
Still nothing on it, though, huh?
Nothing. The post office traced the package from the time it left Detroit. Nobody touched it.
What about while the necklace was in Detroit?
Well, like I told the police, I trust my boy there. He put my seal on it. He mailed it. We checked. I trust him, but we checked, too.
Sam, what about that seal? I mean, you're sure the one on the fake package was yours?
It's my seal, the same. The police examined it. I don't know. Somebody got a hold of it, I guess. But yet they couldn't. There's only me and a Detroit firm who has got one, and they're kept in the safe. My boy, you know, I'm going to retire.
Come on, Sam. Insurance will cover the loss. You're not too badly off.
It'll take years. I know that company. Mark, years.
It's a funny thing about money. You don't have a lot, so you wish you had more. Then when you've got more, you want
more than that, so you won't go back to not having any. Trouble is, where do you stop? The next day, I caught Sam's secretary as she was leaving the office. Oh, Jeannie.
Hi.
Hi.
Where have you been?
Oh, around. You in a rush?
No. Want to take me to dinner?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a date, but I'll break it.
Great. You know, you must be one of the compensations for being broke.
Can I use your phone?
Sure. Come on in the office.
He's a Harvard boy. I've taken terrible advantage of him.
I'll just bet you have. Well, you tell him you've got homework tonight, huh?
I will. I will. Well, that's enough homework for a while.
Oh?
You know, I think you've got something on your mind. I mean, you haven't been concentrating at all.
I'm sorry, honey.
Ha.
I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
This isn't a proposal.
Oh.
You want to make $100,000?
Well, you have got something on your mind.
If you say no, it's okay. If you say yes, you can't back out.
I love to say yes.
Oh, come on, Jeannie, I'm serious.
So am I.
It's about Sam Hyler's necklace.
Oh?
Who do you like more? Your boss or $100,000?
I'm loyal, you know that.
Yeah, I know. To which one?
Money. Sam, too, depending.
Okay, I'll take a chance. I want to show you something.
What?
Well?
How did you...
Deal still on?
Mark, it's the necklace.
Yeah. Beautiful, isn't it?
You are listening to The End of the String, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Chances are the average man in jail would be pleased and reassured to learn that his wife was safe at home, but not the gentleman in the pokey in this week's episode of 21st Precinct. Having jammed the lock on the door to his home prior to his arrest, he is startled and not a little dismayed to realize that his long-suffering wife cannot get out of the house to bail him out, even when she wants to. For engrossing drama with an extra good measure of human interest and humor, don't miss this diverting story on 21st Precinct when it is broadcast this Friday night over most of these same stations. And now we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Stacey Harris, starring in tonight's production, The End of the String, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
She sat looking at the necklace and her mouth opened and shut like a beautiful blonde fish. Then she noticed me staring at her, and she got a hold of herself, reached for a cigarette, and lit it.
Funny. Mr. Hyler's the only one I've ever seen hold that necklace.
It's not heavy. Here. Are you interested?
What are you going
to
do?
What I've been trying to do ever since I got a hold of it. Peddle it.
Oh?
Trouble is, I don't know where to start, and that's where you come in.
Here, take it back. No.
What do you mean, no?
I couldn't help you. I mean, I don't know any more about where to get rid of it. Well, than you.
But if you did know.
I couldn't. Wouldn't make any difference. I just couldn't.
It's worth a million. I figure we could get 200,000, maybe more. Split down the middle, that's... That's $100,000, Jean. Tax-free.
But you'll be caught. So will I.
No. Worst of it's over.
How'd you do it, Mark?
Well, it seems to me I've told you an awful lot already. If we can't make a deal, let's forget it, huh?
Aren't you afraid I'll tell Mr. Hyler?
No. No, because if you did, you'd have to prove what I've told you. That wouldn't be easy. They wouldn't find the necklace around here, and besides, you wouldn't get $100,000.
Why'd you pick me?
Well, Sam works with people in the business. You get his phone calls, answer his mail. Wouldn't be hard to find out who handles this kind of stuff. You could even ask him if you're careful.
That's all I'd have to do? Find out where to sell the necklace?
Not another thing.
All right.
Good. Now, so I won't keep you up tonight, I'll tell you how I worked it. This wasn't done overnight. Sam's been telling me for a long time about that necklace.
But how'd you know he was sending it to Detroit? And when it'd come back?
Empty office next to yours. Did you ever hear of wall mics? Induction coils to pick up phone conversations?
Oh.
That's it. Now, let me turn that thing off.
But you couldn't have got a hold of his seal. All the packages have a seal on.
I didn't have to. I got friendly with the mailman. He always stops to gab when he brings my mail. And about a month ago, I saw a package addressed to Sam.
That wasn't the necklace?
No, but it was an important package. Had Sam's seal on it. So I got the mailman interested in some costume pieces for his wife. And when he was looking at them, I took a wax impression of the seal. Had a stamp made from that.
Just like that?
Just like that. Heard Sam talking to his agent on the phone 2 days before the necklace was mailed from Detroit. I knew when it was going to arrive, so I made up my own package with the seal. Switched them when the mailman stopped by.
Well, how'd you know what the box looked like?
I was in the office when you were wrapping it to mail out to Detroit, remember?
And I thought you hung around because of me.
Well, sure. Sure, you're prettier than Sam. We agreed not to make any contact with each other until she had some word for me. I'd worked it out pretty well. I hoped that she wouldn't be suspected if she did ask questions about fences in Boston or New York, and I hoped she wouldn't lose her nerve. For the next 5 days, I sweated it out alone. The necklace was safe. I didn't have to worry about that. But you're never really happy when $1 million is lying around and you got to borrow $100 to pay rent. Then one evening, just as I was getting home. Hello?
Hello, Mark.
Oh, hi. Where are you?
Downstairs.
Oh, well, come on up.
I wanted to see if it was all right. There's somebody with me.
Oh?
I thought I'd do a little work to earn the money. I found a man, called him myself.
Does he know what it is?
Not yet.
Are you sure he's all right?
I think so. Yes.
Okay, come on up. Hi, Jeannie.
Mark, this is Mr. Larkin. Mark Hendricks.
How are you?
Mr. Hendricks.
Well, can I fix your drink?
Never drink, thanks.
Oh, well, sit down. Jeannie, you want to get me a scotch and water?
Yeah, all right.
Thanks. Well, Jean tells me you're interested in jewelry.
I represent an outfit that buys and sells.
Mm-hmm. You in the market to buy right now?
Might be. Depends what's being sold.
Oh, sure.
From folks we don't know, we usually take stuff on consignment.
No, that's out. This is a cash proposition only.
Uh-huh.
You have much call for pearls?
Not much. Of course, for special customers, once in a while we buy them.
How about a pearl necklace?
Might be interested. You got it?
Not on me. I can get it, though.
How much you want?
$200,000?
For Pearl?
It's worth $1 million.
You're crazy.
Oh, it's insured for over $600,000.
The Highland necklace? You got that?
I might.
You're a pretty foolish boy.
What do you mean?
You're working backwards. You should figure how to get rid of it before you lift it. Nobody's going to touch that necklace.
Well, now, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
You didn't tell me what your boyfriend had, honey. You're wasting my time.
Well, just take a look at it, huh? Maybe you'll change your mind.
What do I want to look at it for? I wouldn't give you $1,000 for it. Nothing. You better get rid of that thing any way you can. I'm telling you. Nice to have met you, folks. And I'd like to ask you to please forget my name.
He was gone, just like that. Jeannie stood there holding a couple of glasses, looking at the door. There wasn't anything to say, so we didn't try. After a couple of drinks, though, we felt better. So one guy was afraid to handle a big item. There were others. We'd go after them. Jeannie and I got to know most of the fences in the east during the next month. We'd only have to say pearls and the door would slam. Word gets around. I was getting a little scared, so I decided on another plan. We had to be even more careful about getting together, so Jeannie met me on her lunch hour in the public library. We went to the reference room and walked down to a back aisle.
Listen, Mark, let's forget it, huh?
What do you mean?
We can't sell it. We've tried. Let's forget it.
What are you going to do with it? Just drop it in the bay?
I don't care, just so we get rid of it.
Now, look, we've gone this far. We can't just... Shh, be quiet.
Excuse me.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
Now, you look. We've gone this far. We can't just get rid of it.
Then what do we do?
The reward.
What?
What happens if we find it? We get the reward, don't we? That's $30,000 apiece.
No, I won't do it.
Now, you listen to me. I'm not going back to those $1.98 earrings. I don't care about you. You do what you want. But I know we can get $30,000 each out of this. That's a lot better than nothing.
Is it better than prison?
We won't get caught, Jeannie. I promise you. I've got it all figured out.
Like you had it figured out to sell.
All right, I was wrong. I admit it. This time I'm right.
I'm afraid.
No, now look, it's simple. There's nothing to it. They'll never know.
Are you sure?
Let me give you the idea, then you decide. Okay?
Okay.
I guess a deal like this is something like poker. It's hoping you'll pull an inside straight flush, which doesn't happen very often, and the stakes are a lot higher. I made it sound real easy to Jeannie, though. I was to go to Hyler, tell him I'd been doing a bit of private eyeing on my own, and that I'd had a tip. Some punk had seen a guy put a small package in one of the lockers at the South Station. That was what I was supposed to know. I'd paid said punk $50 for the information. We set it up like that. Jeannie took the necklace and a package to the station on her lunch hour. I thought it best not to see her after that, and I waited until the next morning before I went to Sam and told him the news. The college boy type cop, Collie, was at the office 10 minutes later.
Who was this fellow, Hendricks?
Well, I told you, I don't know. I was snooping around. I made a couple of contacts.
Yeah, and the pearls are at the South Station?
Well, if they're not, I spent $50 for nothing.
Mr. Collie, why do you waste time? Mark is doing me a big favor, and you're asking questions. Let's get over there. And don't you worry, my boy. If I get my necklace back, you'll have your $50 and everything else that's coming to you.
Let's go.
Which locker is it, Mark, huh?
36, that's what the guy told me.
We'll find out.
Look, Collie, I don't like the way you talk. I'm just trying to help. If you didn't get the reward first, that's not my fault, you know.
Uh-huh. 36?
36.
I'll get the attendant over. He'll have a key.
No, no, wait a minute, look. It ain't locked.
Well, Hendricks?
Mark, think, maybe you forgot the number, huh?
No, I didn't forget. That's what he said, 36.
Yeah, but there's nothing in it. It's empty.
Well, Hendricks?
Well, I guess I'm out $50.
Yeah, too bad.
she done with it? I couldn't get to the office. I couldn't be seen with her, but I had to know. What had she done with it? I waited all day until she finished work. Then I was waiting outside her apartment when she got home. Jean, now listen, I want to know...
Wait till we get inside.
Okay, where is it?
Here, take it.
Why didn't you do what I told you to do? Why didn't you put it in the locker?
I did.
Why didn't you put it in the locker?
I can't put it in. Yesterday. Then this morning I heard Mr. Heiler talking to Collie about you and me seeing so much of each other. I was afraid they were beginning to suspect, so I went back to the station and took it out again. I was trying to do you a favor. And you slept.
I'm sorry, Jeannie.
I'll bet you are. Go away. I don't want to see you again. And I don't want to see that necklace again. But you'd better get rid of it. Go throw it in the bay. And you go with it.
Get rid of it. Lose it. $1 million burning a hole in your pocket and you throw it away? No. No, don't throw it away. It's too beautiful. Put it back where you got it. Give it back to Sam. Go back to Sam Hyler's office, and in the morning, old Sam will be so happy to find it on his desk, he won't ask any questions. And maybe Collie won't. So beautiful. $1 million. And so beautiful. Huh.
That's a good boy, Mark.
Collie.
You know, I was getting awfully tired of following you around.
Well, it was a great idea anyway. Starting with $1 million, sure, you have to take a loss, so you settle for $200,000. But nobody buys, so then there's the reward, $60,000. It turns out nobody's going to get that. That takes care of the reward. Anybody get a dime for a lawyer?
Suspense, in which Stacey Harris starred in tonight's presentation of The End of the String. Next week, we bring you a story of a mother, a father, a locked door, and a baby. We call it The Cellar Door. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script was written by David Williams. The music was composed by Lucian Morawek and Renee Garrigan and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Benny Rubin, Mary Jane Croft, Larry Thor, Jim Nusser, and Jack Crucian.
There may be two sides to most stories, but where a story of crime is concerned, there's only one place to be, and that is on the right side of the law. Unfortunately for him, the nice-looking boy finds himself on the wrong side of the law. When the FBI in Peace and War next goes into action to track down an impulsive killer. How they link the handsome youth to the ugly crime is a story in itself. A story you want to hear tomorrow night over most of these same CBS radio stations on the FBI in Peace and War. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed on most of these same stations by the Jack Carson Show. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense on the Upstate Radio Theater, The End of the String, episode 633 in that long-running series, as originally broadcast January 17th, 1956 on CBS Radio. And you are indeed tuned in to the Upstate Radio Theater. We present a wide variety of old-time radio for your listening pleasure. We originate from Geneva, New York, in the heart of the Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. The address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what some of your favorite old-time radio shows are, and I'll do my best to play your requests on future episodes. If you want more information about the radio theater, including detailed playlists, or if you'd like to stream this and previous episodes in the series again, then you'll want to check out our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is the Upstate Radio Theater, show number 1621. We'll wrap up the hour with some classic comedy, as we have an episode of The Milton Berle Show. Milton Berle, better known as Uncle Milty or Mr. Television, will always best be remembered for his pioneering work on TV. In fact, he was the first major American TV star as the host of the Texaco Star Theater on NBC Television from 1948 to 1955. However, like many early television stars, Milton Berle was, prior to being a TV star, a radio sensation. Beginning in 1934, when he made frequent appearances on the Rudy Valley Hour, he was part of many comedy, variety, and quiz programs throughout the 30s and 40s, including Stop Me If You've Heard This One, Three Ring Time, Let Yourself Go, and Kiss and Make Up. In 1947, The Milton Berle Show debuted on NBC, sponsored by the Philip Morris Tobacco Company. It ran from March of 1947 through April of 1948, with a regular cast including Pert Kelton and announcer Frank Gallup. We'll hear an episode of this series, program number 32 in the series, in fact, as originally broadcast on October 14th of 1947, and to comply with FCC regulations, we did have to edit the tobacco commercials in the episode, but we've got everything else for you. And on this episode, Milton Berle salutes the opening of the New York Broadway theater season. It's the Milton Berle Show on the Upstate Radio Theater.
From Radio City in New York, here is the Milton Berle Show, with Pert Kelton, Jack Albertson, Charles Irving, Mary Shipp, Billy Sands, Al Kelly, our singing star Dick Farney, the music of Ray Block and his orchestra, and yours truly, Frank Gallup. Ladies and gentlemen.
They know what they are.
Tonight, we salute the opening of the New York theater season.
That's true.
Our star, Milton Berle, has been in many an opening night.
That's right.
Most of his plays didn't last much longer.
Big joke.
And here he is, Milton Berle.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Gallup, you bring up a delicate subject when you speak of my career in the theater. Oh, what excitement, what glamour, what flops. You think I'm kidding? I've been in so many turkeys, they call me Stuffy. I'm not kidding. In my last play, the backers were paid off in cranberries. We got off to a flying low. I've been in a lot of shows, really.
I know. Well, Berle, I do hope this doesn't mean we're in for an evening of your nauseating nostalgia.
Oh, yes, it does. Will you? You're very nice tonight. You're easy on me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But the reason I started it that way is I just wanted to mention one show I was in, a little show called Spring in Brazil. Were you the three that saw it? No, it was a nice show. It was one of those gay musicals. The people left the theater humming. They were humming the music from Oklahoma. The show wasn't bad. There's just one thing wrong. The seats faced the stage. The seats faced the stage. I think they should be facing tonight, the stage. But I had the audience in that show. I had them in the palm of my hand. That'll give you an idea of how many people were in the audience. One night, we sent the whole audience home in a cab. And what a blow. Oh, what a blow to my reputation, Mr. Gallup, when that show closed. I felt so bad. I really do. The producer wouldn't talk to me. My friends snubbed me. I didn't mind that, but when I came home one night and found my mother erasing her name from my birth certificate, that was too much. But why talk about my failures in the theater? Let us talk about my successes, huh?
Well, that should take no time at all.
Mr. Gallup, no, you jest, you're clowning, because I was the star of the last Ziegfeld Follies.
That explains why it was the last one.
Mr. Gallup, look at me.
Yes?
I got news for you.
Yes?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you set?
Yes.
Is your throttle open?
Yes.
I was a sensational hit in the Ziegfeld Follies. Did you hear about it?
I saw you in it.
Well?
Look at me, Burl.
Yes?
I have tidings for you.
Yes?
Are you prepared?
Yes.
Are you in a receptive mood?
Yes.
Is the volume up on your hearing device?
Yes.
In the last Ziegfeld Follies, you were a big
Follies?
Nothing. Did you hear about it?
Follies?
Nobody would have known.
In the Follies? The Follies, eh? You will be back on Prudential next week.
Can I get insurance on that?
Can you get insurance on that?
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute.
No
ad-libbing, that's a bad policy. Now, please, Mr. Gallup, when you said that I was a big nothing in the Ziegfeld Follies, you hurt me deeply. I mean it painfully and brutally. I was a nothing in the Ziegfeld Follies, Mr. Gallup. May I say, and when it gets serious, you have plunged a dagger into a most sensitive spot.
Next time, I'll aim higher.
That's right. Go ahead. Go ahead and laugh. Laugh at Burl.
Why should I? Nobody else does.
Mr. Gallup! That's very undemocratic and un-American. He's got that Ziegfeld Follies yet. Hitting me, a man, when he's down. Today, the world needs kindness and good fellowship. I can only recommend...
You rendered it.
Looks like we'll wind up together. We all will, too. I can only recommend, Mr. Gallup, that you visit the Freedom Train.
The Freedom Train?
Yes. The next time it pulls into town... Throw yourself in front of him. I'm only kidding. But enough of this side-splitting, rib-tickling nothing. Let us get on. You know, this is Meatless Tuesday. It's sure showing up in the script, too. So let us get on with our salute to the Broadway Theater. Broadway, the great white way. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to salute the forgotten men of the theater. Yes, the world knows names like Catherine Cornell, Tallulah Bankhead, Maurice Evans, Maxie Rosenblum, B.S. Pulley. But who knows the backers of the theater, the men who put up the money? Who ever heard of names like J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, DuPont? Nobody. Why, you could pass them in the automat and never recognize them. It is to such a man that I wish to pay tribute tonight. The financial backer who gave me my start in the theater and whose confidence in me never wavered. I remember the first time I went up to his office. I was a young actor with my first play, and timidly, I opened the door.
Burl, come right in.
Yes, sir. About the play.
I read it. I like it. I like you. I like the whole thing. I like your attitude. I like it.
Gee, that...
I'm putting a fortune into this play. Why? I like it. I like you. I'll make you the biggest star on Broadway, or my name isn't Simon Ackerman.
Well, gosh, Mr. Ackerman.
I like you.
Well, the next time I saw him was about a year later. Nervously, I entered his office.
Burl?
I'm awfully sorry, sir, about the play.
So it was a flop. So I lost some money. But I like show business. I like you. Kill me. I like you. What's that under your arm?
That's another play.
I like it. I don't have to see it. I like it. I like the whole idea. I like the idea of putting money into it. And you know why, Burl?
Why?
Because I like you.
Well, gosh, I don't know what to say.
Say you like me.
Well, I like you.
I like you, too.
I like you. I like you. Yes, Mr. Ackerman liked me. And as quick as he put money into my shows, they flopped. Finally, he put his entire fortune into building a theater for me. the Milton Berle Theater. I remember the day it was completed. He stood there, and I'll never forget the way he turned to me and he said,
I like it.
Play after play closed. Today, the lights are out in the Milton Berle Theater, but Mr. Ackerman is still in the theater. This former Wall Street tycoon... to this day stands in the doorway of that very theater, and you can hear him say,
now, French, I have here a little potato peeler that not only feels great and illuminates...
But there were no hard feelings, because I bought a potato peeler, and he liked me again. But that's show business, and you know my theme song, there's no business like show business. Well, I picked it because it brings back fond memories of my early vaudeville days with that one and only girl. That's why I sing,
there's no business like show business, like no business I know. Hey, 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 hey!
Ah, show business. Cynthia. Golden memories of Cynthia. Golden memories of old vaudeville days with Cynthia. I remember the first time I saw you, Cynthia. You were doing an act with a trained seal. How clever that seal was. He'd throw the ball up at you and you'd balance it on your nose. How proud you looked sitting on the stage with your head held high. You had to hold your head high, otherwise you'd miss the fish. Talented Cynthia. What a contortionist you were, Cynthia. You'd twist yourself until your legs were around your neck and your arms were under your knees and your head was under your elbow. Somehow, Cynthia, you look better that way. But it was your beauty, Cynthia. Beauty that haunted me. I remember your coal black hair that you wore in a snood. I used to help you shovel it in. Ah, Cynthia, you weren't pretty. You weren't ugly. You were more ugly than pretty. You were pretty ugly. But it was the little things I remember about you, Cynthia. The little things. The cute little way that you'd wrinkle up your nose every time someone opened a can of kennel ration. Your surprised little laugh in the middle of your bicycle act whenever you discovered that they forgot to put on the seat. Boing! Your tinkling. Your tinkling little laugh the time that you let that magician saw you in half and then found out he was a carpenter. So until they put you together again, I'll go on singing. So let's go on with the show. Yes, let's go on with the show. Dandy, played by Ray Blackburn and the film. Thank you for letting me direct the orchestra, please. Thank you. That was you. Ray, may I say that you are a musician right down to your fingertips. If only the rest of you had a little talent. I'm only kidding, Ray. I think you're a great musician, and to me, you sound like one of the old masters. One of the old mix masters. And now... Well, I thought I would stir up a little few laughs. As we continue our salute to the theater, we present...
Theater Forum tonight. The question, will Milton Berle's vaudeville act ever take the place of the flea circus?
Yes, sir. Ziegfeld Fahries. But now, let's get on to the questions from the floor. All right, let's start with this tall gentleman in the second row honing a razor in the man in front of him. Yes, sir.
Mr. Berle, yes. I personally want to thank you for this tribute to the theater.
You're in show business?
All my life. I was born in a trunk.
Born in a trunk? Your father was an actor?
No, he was an elephant.
Thank you, and say hello to Sabu. Let us go on. All right, this young man here dabbing the perfume on his earlobes. Young man, what is your name?
My name is Cynthia.
Cynthia?
I'm not
Mr. Fink, you always sing those love songs to.
I know, I know.
After all, what could you see in me?
Nothing.
I hate the name Cynthia.
Yeah?
People don't call me that once they see that look in my eye.
When they see that look in their eye, in your eye, what do they call you?
Cockeye.
All right, C.E. You have a question about the theater?
Yeah. Why can't I get a break as a comedian on Broadway?
Well, I
got looks, I got talent, I got jokes, so why? Tell me why.
Well, I'm afraid that...
Why should it hurt you if there's another comedian?
But I didn't...
Oh, sure, you already made your load, so what do you care about me?
Look, I don't...
Broadway needs me because I got a pile of jokes you ain't even stolen yet.
Now, wait
Broadway
a minute.
Needs me because you're not getting any younger, you
All
know?
All right, but
Broadway
I'm...
needs me because they haven't had a laugh since you said you were going at the radio.
Please.
I dropped dead already.
Now, please, let us try to control ourselves. Young man, if you have a question, let's have it.
Okay. Do you think I should lower my hem?
Please, let us go on to the women in our audience. This lady in the aisle here cleaning buckshot out of a duck. Your name, please?
Tallulah Feeney. I'm a homemaker.
I see. And you have a question concerning the theater?
Yeah, how can I keep my husband out of burlesque theaters? He got calluses on his chin from resting it on runways.
Your husband is a burlesque fan?
Are you kidding? At night he won't even take off his tie unless I applaud.
No fooling.
When they closed up Minsky's, he was the last one to leave.
I see. He liked watching the girls at Minsky's?
Liked it. He even got a kick out of watching Minsky take off his hat.
He gets enthusiastic?
Nah, when he wants a girl to come back on the stage, he don't applaud like the others. He uses his head.
He uses his head?
Yeah, he bangs it on the floor.
That's terrible.
He's got over 100 pictures of Gypsy Rose Lee. It's amazing.
What's amazing about having over 100 pictures of Gypsy Rose Lee?
Tattooed on his body.
Oh, well, that's different.
When he takes off his clothes, he looks like the front page of the Police Gazette.
Mrs. Feeney, how do you stand for all this? Don't you mind your husband going to burlesque shows?
Nah, he just goes to burlesque shows because he likes the candy they sell there.
Oh, now, Mrs. Feeney, are you sure he doesn't go there to enjoy the girls?
Listen, he's so stupid, he's lucky if he can enjoy candy.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Feeney. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as a fitting climax to our theatrical forum, we are very honored this evening by the presence of that great Shakespearean actor and dramatic coach, Otis Finster. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Finster.
Thank you. Thank you. I am very deeply thrilled at your fine story for my taking sale.
Thank you very much. Mr. Finster, here are some questions that have been sent in for you to answer. From Scranton, Pennsylvania, a young drama student writes, what are some exercises for developing a good speaking voice?
I can only recommend what I myself do.
Yeah?
Every morning I arise, walk over to the stile, and try to find which is my comet for business. I don't know whether that was going to watch my bait because I have a fee, but there's only a clamor, and there's a deposit back on the bottle. Next question?
Well, a man from Pasadena writes, what's the first step toward having a play produced?
What a coincidence.
Why?
Only this week, a man came to me with a play and said, Mr. Finster, I would like to stick a back of throw with Tillman. Yeah. He would like to stick a back of throw with Tillman. Who wouldn't? I told him to braise the entire thing on a sword because whatever is left with pain makes mine feel with force. And would you believe it? Today, that man can eat anything.
Mr. Finster, in summing up, what advice would you give a young, hopeful actor?
Young actors, go out in the world and spray your theme for Salmon Bay. Don't be a Kleinmeier. Don't let people point to you on the street and say, look, there goes a Schleimer brain. Be a Schrein. Be a Thurman. But above all, be a Flump. In conclusion, I can only repeat the words of that great Thurman phrase, Sir Oscar Thibblebrand, who said, quote, the world of the phrase leaves you kind with slime, unquote.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's our young singing star, Dick Bonney, to sing You Do.
Who knows how much I love you? You do. No one means more. more to me than you do. You take December and smile it into me, and then December comes back again when you're away. Who has a charm that very few do? Who makes life necessary? You do. And who can take my dreams and make my dreams come true? Don't give me three guesses, one will do. Take my dreams and make my dreams come true. Don't give me three guesses, one will do.
You know, Mr. Gallup, I am not without singing talent myself.
Did you know that?
No, no. I auditioned for the Theater Guild. They wanted me in Oklahoma. Then they decided it wasn't far enough away. Oh, what a theater season this is going to be, Mr. Gallup.
Huh? Yes, indeed. And by the way,
what?
How did you like the new Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Allegro? Did you go opening night?
Oh, brother, what happened to me? Oscar Hammerstein and Dick Rogers reserved two tickets for me, and that night my wife and I went down to the Majestic Theater. What a brilliant opening night crowd.
Have your tickets ready, please. Tickets, please.
Boy, darling, what an opening. All the critics and big stars are here.
Milton, let's go in and take our seats.
Oh, we have a few minutes, darling. I just want to say hello to some of my friends in the lobby. Oh, there's Fred Allen. Hiya, Fred. Hi, Fred Allen. Hi, boy. Hi, Fred. Freddy. Remember me? I guess he didn't see me. Oh, look, there's Walter Winchell. Hi, Walter. Hi, Winchell. Hey, Winchell. Hey, Walter. Hey, Walt. Hey, Wal. I guess he didn't recognize me or something.
Funny how everybody's so glad to see you. Let's go in.
Okay, I'll pick up the tickets at the box office here. They were left in my name. Pardon me, mister. You've got two tickets there in my name, Burl, Milton Burl.
Get in line. This man is in front of you.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. Just hand me the two tickets.
Get away from the window.
Now, what was it, sir?
I want two tickets. They shouldn't be too high up.
Please, will you hurry up?
What night?
Leave me see. Monday's no good. I got to listen to Nelson Eddy on the telephone now.
Oh, come on.
Tuesday night, I got my air raid warden meeting.
Oh, please.
Titan going up.
Look, the play is starting. Will you give me the tickets?
Get away from the window.
Oh, please.
Now, how about Wednesday night, mister?
Yeah, well, Wednesday night, mister. That's a great night.
Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Good. Give me two for Wednesday.
Yeah, give them two for Wednesday.
We're sold out.
Yeah. Look, they're closing the doors. Will you give me the tickets?
What's the matter? Can't you see this man is in front of you?
Yeah.
Milton, where's the tickets? The play is starting.
Ziegfeld Farris, is that it? No. Yes, the play is starting. What can I do? Look who's in front of me, a jerk.
Yeah.
Okay, mister. Have you made up your mind?
Yeah, please. Well, mister, will you make up your mind?
Leave me see. Oh. How about Friday night?
Yeah. How about Friday night?
Oh, good. I can give you two tickets for Friday night.
He can give you two tickets for Friday night.
I can't go.
Yeah. Now, please. Overture. Mister, will you give me the ticket?
Get away from the window.
Get away, please. The show is on.
10-minute intermission. Smoking in the lobby only.
How do you like that? The first act is over. Give me the ticket.
Get away from the window. Well, mister?
Got anything for New Year's Eve?
Will you give him something for New Year's Eve? Give him a Mickey, will you, please?
Well, I I've got two nice seats for Saturday matinee, July 16th.
Take them.
Nah, that's the day I promised to take my little boy to the beach.
That's nice. While you're there, drown yourself, please. Look, mister, let's face it. You really don't want to see Allegro.
Allegro?
Yeah.
Ain't this the line for Annie Get Your Gun?
Yeah. Annie Get Your Gun. You're in the wrong theater.
Then what are you wasting my time for?
All right, mister, will you hurry up, please, the tickets?
Are you here for tickets, sir?
Yeah, yes, I just... No, not tickets. I just dropped in for a haircut. That's right. Take a little off the top, will you? Look, I have two tickets here in my name for tonight.
What's your name?
Burl, Milton Burl, will you? Hurry up, please.
Let me look now.
Yes,
let's
look.
See. Reservations. Benson, Billingsley, Begley, Pipkin. I have two tickets for Pipkin.
That's nice. Hammerstein.
I'll see. Benson, Billingsley, Begley, Burl, Pipkin.
Oh, wait.
You said you weren't Pipkin.
I'm not. My name is Burl.
You just said it was Hammerstein.
Now, wait a minute.
Get away.
Second act, Titan going up.
Second act, please.
What was the name, please?
Pipkin.
Let me look. Benson, Billingsley, Begley. Sorry, Mr.
Oh, don't stop.
The only thing I have for tonight are two under the name of Burl.
But they put... Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Burl, that's me.
Oh, you're Burl.
Yeah.
Well, who did you leave the tickets for, Mr. Burl?
Yeah. The Hammerstein. No, Pipkin left... Look, my name is Burl. The tickets were left in the box office.
Last act, curtain going up.
Last act, give me the tickets. Just give me one ticket. My wife went to a newsreel.
I looked all over, Mr. Rogers. I can't find any tickets for Hammerstein.
Now, look, Mr. Burl. All I want...
Box office.
Give me the tickets.
You don't want the tickets, Mr. Pipkin? Okay, I'll try and get rid of them.
I'll take them. Give me his tickets.
What tickets?
The tickets you want to get rid of.
But, Mr. Pipkin, you just said you didn't want them.
Again with the Pipkin. Look, for 2 hours I've been telling you the tickets are for Burl.
There are no tickets for Burl. Here, look for yourself.
All right, I'll look. Let's see. Benson, Billingsley, Begley, Burl, Dalton, Dugan. You're right.
What'd I tell you?
And they promised they'd leave him under the name of Pipkin. Play is over. People are coming out.
Keep moving. Don't block the lobby.
Give me the tickets.
Go home, Mr. Pipkin. The play is over.
Give me the tickets.
Go home and sleep it off.
Give me the tickets.
What's going on here, Charlie?
Give me the tickets.
Mr. Hammerstein, this drunk's been hanging around all night.
Give me the tickets.
You mean it? Burl!
Give me the tickets.
I'm shocked at your revolting behavior.
Give me the tickets.
Drunk on an opening night. You're a disgrace to the name of Burl.
The name is Pipkin.
I'm disgusted. Wait till I tell Rogers.
The name is Hammerstein.
Don't ever again come to Hammerstein for a favor.
The name is Rogers.
I've never witnessed a more scandalous display.
Give me the box office.
Just for that, I'm tearing up the two tickets I left in your name for tomorrow night.
Give me the... Wait, let me understand. They were for tomorrow night?
Yes.
Give me the tickets!
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Milton Berle Show, from October 14th, 1947, on NBC. And that does it for this hour of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again when you can, won't you, for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.